Tampa MX Network production.
A cerebral and experienced look into the racing action from the week that was. This is Industry Seating with Jason Thomas. Presented by Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Works Connection, Bass Foundry, TL Speed Shop, Concept Coatings Design Co., Grandstone Boots, and Fly Racing.
Welcome to the Industry Seating Podcast. My name is Jason Thomas. Thank you to all of the sponsors of this podcast: Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Works Connection, Pro Glow Wash, TL Speed Shop, Concept Coatings Design Co., Grandstone Boots, and Fly Racing. Now, this sound quality is a little different this week. I apologize, but I'm out actually on a pretty long walk, and I wanted to try something different on the podcast this week. I always find when I go for a walk, I just think more clearly. I have better insights, and I'm able to kind of work through the way I see things a little better. When I do the podcast, I'm kind of just sitting there staring at the wall. I get a little bored, and I don't think that I really articulate my thoughts as well. And maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. I just wanted to try this, and yes, there will be some wind noise and some passing cars, and I get it. I apologize. I know like Steve's audio quality is such a big thing for him, but I'm going to give it a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But we're going to try it for this week. Anyway, so last week we were in Philadelphia, and we have not been there since 1980. So obviously been a long time, and you know, I think Brock Glover was the last person to win there. But I thought it was great. You know, everybody was kind of wondering how this would go. You know, it's these Northeast venues can be really hit and miss, not only with weather, but turnout. You know, we're in these metro areas. You don't ever know what you're going to get. That's always the risk with a new venue, especially in, I believe, areas that, you know, that people have to travel. You know, there's not a lot of downtown Philly dwellers that are going to show up to Supercross. That's just not what this is. So you're hoping that your New Jersey, your, you know, surrounding areas of PA, maybe New York, south of there, Maryland, Delaware, you got to get all those people to make it successful. And thankfully, I think it worked. They turned out, the attendance was good. The weather worked out, even though it got really dicey there for a bit. You know, an afternoon race, which I think helps. You know, I was wondering about that. I don't know going in if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think if you're driving in from outside the city, it just feels a little safer. You know, you arrive at like noon and you're out of there at 6 p.m. It's still daylight out. That feels like a pretty safe environment, and you would feel comfortable taking your family in and out of there, enjoy Fan Fest, and you're not trying to get to your car at, you know, 11 p.m. or whatever it could be, if it was a normal schedule. So I think in this scenario that it possibly worked better. So what do we see as far as the racing goes? You know, it was the 250 East class had taken a pretty big hit in Nashville with that showdown race, and McAdoo exits the series. Deegan doesn't really put in the result that he would have been hoping for. So Vial really was in the catbird seat. You know, he goes into the race with a 13-point lead, and nothing's really locked up. We know that. You know, these races have been pretty chaotic. Vial's never been in this spot for Monster Energy Supercross. We know in MX2 he has. But I wanted to see how he would respond. What would he do? And when that gate dropped in the 250 main, and both he and Deegan got bad starts, I was like, oh, here we go, right? They're together. You know, Deegan is sensing an opportunity here. So how is he going to make the most of this? What's he going to do with it? Is he going to go after VL and be aggressive? Or is he simply going to just race his own race? And it was really the latter. You know, we really never saw him take a shot at VL at all. You know, you could argue that he never got the opportunity to. that may be fair as well. But I think there was a thought by some that if Deegan was presented with an opportunity, that he would go for the kill. You know, he would play games in practice. He would get behind him in qualifying. You know, Steve Mathis and Jason Weigand were both on that train. They thought it was coming. The comments, the gamesmanship, all those things, they felt were in the cards. And we would see him, and we didn't get any of that. So I don't know if that was Brian, you know, telling Hayden, like, hey, man, let's just go race. Like, a lot of points. We just gotta try to win the race and see where it goes. Or if it was just an opportunistic thing and he really never got his shot to kind of, you know, think outside the box on how to win this title. I think it was more a decisive thing. Like, I think it was decided before going in. Because if you look at the way he raced, he didn't really do anything crazy. Then you look at his comments on the podium. I think that was kind of the proof there. You know, those comments where he gave Vial a lot of credit. He just said he did the best he could. He said he's got a lot, you know, big future ahead of him. Like, he said all the right things. So that leads me to think that there was really no shenanigans. There were no shenanigans planned for any of that. Because if there were and he just wasn't able to execute, I think he would have taken some shots there and said, I should have won and this and that. But we didn't see any of that. We saw a very measured and very composed Hayden Deegan and a mature one, which I think is, it's a welcome change. And even his biggest detractors, those that are just not Hayden Deegan fans, I think they had to show him a little bit of respect there. You just had to kind of, you know, I guess nod your head and say, yep, that's how you're supposed to do it. You know, you don't have to, I'm sure they still don't really care for him. But in that scenario, there was really no shot that they could take at him. So now we've talked a lot about those two, but we haven't even talked about Max Anstey. And he won the race. I mean, that was an incredible performance by Anstey. The situation removed him from any championship fight. You know, it was really the end of the road when his engine basically gave out on him in Birmingham. And, you know, there were lots of troubles after that. You know, he didn't really do much up until this. You know, it was okay. But this was the Max Anstey that we thought we could see going into the series. There was so much hype around Anstey, what he could do, the speed he had at the test track. And this was kind of making good on all of that talk. So he's going to be at Star Racing next year. You know, that was the big rumor coming out of the Philadelphia paddock that he signed a deal with Monster Yamaha Star Racing for, I'm guessing, 25 and 26. I don't know that for sure, but pretty good money. And I know that his team is bummed on that, right? Because they put him in a really good position. They fought really hard. They had the red plate. They've won a race. But in the end, if you're Max, of course you're going to sign this deal. And that was kind of what I pushed back, because of course he wears Fire Racing. So I'm close to the situation somewhat. And I hear things behind the scenes. And I know that they're upset that he decided to go that route, but I just kind of shook my head. And I didn't say this to them, but I would. You know, whether it's Yareve or Martin Davalos or whoever, I would just shake my head and say, you guys are being silly. You know, he has a chance to go to a full factory team and get really good bonuses on what's arguably the best bike in the pits, the bike that everybody else is envious of. Of course he's going to go. His salary is really good. Like, why would he even hesitate? And I'm sure he didn't. So to me, it's a little bit of a ridiculous argument. But, I'm sure they're just more frustrated that they lost him than anything else. I just don't see how they could possibly make a logical argument for him to stay. That's just my take on it. The Swole Hamaker thing, it's tough, you know. They're both battling. Swole saw an opportunity, and he went for it. And realistically, he should go for it, you know. The tough part is that he's racing against a guy in Seth Hamaker that doesn't know how to let off. Like, if you're ever getting into a tight, you know, scenario, close quarters with Seth Hamaker, and your, I guess your strategy is to force him into backing out of it, that is a losing strategy. That is not going to work with Seth Haymaker. He doesn't know how to back out of it. He never has. He probably never will. So, you know, some of that has to be on Swole. You have to know who you're racing, and you have to know their tendencies. You have to know the way they're thinking, what they're going to do before they do it. Also, some of the blames on Haymaker. You have to be really aware. And, you know, I've seen Seth make really poor decisions and have huge crashes and big issues because of it, you know, and that's, it's just part of the game, you know, and for Seth, you want to say it's big risk, big reward, but man, the rewards have been fleeting, you know. Winning that heat race was cool, but it's tough to find lots of scenarios for Seth where, you know, he's taken all these chances and they've paid off in spades. Like, that just hasn't happened so much. So that leads me to wonder if he's taking far too much risk, like if he needs to back it down a little bit. And I wouldn't isolate him in this. You know, RJ Hampshire would say the same thing. Cameron McAdoo, I've said the same thing over the years. You know, these guys that can't seem to finish series, they can't stay upright for long periods of time. They crash a lot. You can see them on the edge of control most of the time. You just wonder, are they going about things correctly? Now, the counter argument to that thesis, and this is probably what they would say, is that, yeah, they could slow down. They could take less chances, but they would go slower. Their results would be worse. They wouldn't be battling for wins. And then their likelihood of getting new contracts is much less, right? The winning scenario and where you want to get to is where Kitchen had gotten to this year. It's where Vial is, I think, headed. It's where the stars of the sport, it's the level that they found. It's something they've unlocked, right? You think about the Dungies, the Tomacs, Villopotos, Reeds, Carmichael. I don't even know about Carmichael. He was pretty wild at times. But all these guys, you know, think about the best guys in the sport, Jet, Hunter last year, they found ways to be the best guy on the track speed-wise, but they've lowered the risk ratio significantly. You know, they're not taking big risks. They're not out of control half the main event. You're not constantly watching them with one eye open thinking the other shoe's about to drop, right? And I'm not saying that I know how to get there. If I did, I would have done it myself. I'm just telling you as an analyst now, There is a place that these riders get to. And once they're there, that is the level of sustainability. That's how you stay a factory rider. That's how you get a factory 450 deal. And that's how you're at that level for years and years, is because you figure that out. And I don't even know how to really define it, you know, but I know it when I see it. And it's really just week in and week out. Those guys are some of the fastest guys on the racetrack without all of the volatility. They're not on the edge of control at all times. And it's if you're at every race and you watch every lap these guys do like I do, it's pretty easy to spot. And that's the place where I think Haymaker needs to get to. That's where McAdoo's trying to get to. It's where Hampshire's been trying to get to for a decade. And I think he's as close as he's ever been right now. I don't know that he's still there, though. Like, if you watch RJ in qualifying practice, he has some really close moments, and I mean really close, and sometimes he goes over the line still. So I wouldn't even say RJ has that figured out quite yet. I think he's working on it, but it's definitely something that, you know, to stay at the level you need to find longevity in this sport, especially as you move to the 450 class, it's mandatory. You know, it's just not going to work without it. So we will get to the power rankings this week, but again, I want to thank the sponsors of this podcast for being a part of it: Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Works Connection, Pro Glow Wash, Concept Coatings Design Co., TL Speed Shop, Grant Stone Boots, and Fly Racing. I'm sorry if I'm out of breath. I'm walking. I didn't think it would be this tough to walk and talk, but I guess when you never stop talking, that's what happens. But anyway, hope the sound and the cars driving by and the wind aren't too bad. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I just wanted to give this a shot anyway. It's been fun for me so far to do something different. So let's jump into the power rankings this week. And without further ado, number 10, I put Benny Bloss in here. And, you know, this wasn't his best race. He got 12th. But he got 8th the weekend before. And the simple fact is that Benny's riding better than he has in a very long time. And he's on that beta. And they've been working to improve the bike. You know, he's been really patient with them. There was a lot, and I mean a lot, going on behind the scenes with he and the motorcycle right before the season started. So if you were wondering why he was so far off at the beginning, that's why. It's not my place to kind of go into details about what was going on, but there was a lot of upheaval and change and chaos right before the season with the bike. And I think they've just got it figured out now. So, you know, is his bike as good as a factory Honda? No. I think that would be crazy and silly to assume or even propose. But I think they've got him into a place where he's riding well, you know? He's super competitive. He's battling with full factory guys. And this is a good place and a good thing for Benny. So I'm happy for him. And I think he deserves to be at number 10. Number 9, Justin Cooper. And he had to go to the LCQ after that first lap crash. But in typical Jay Coop fashion, he hole shots and runs away. And if you give Justin Cooper a hole shot in any class, he's going to be dangerous. You know, he hasn't quite figured out how to stay there the whole time at the front, but it's a work in progress. And there's no way you could look at this and say it hasn't been going the right direction. That's impossible. You know, he has gotten better and better and better all the way through this season. And this is a guy that really didn't have a ride. You know, it took Bobby Reagan stepping up and basically funding a program by himself because he didn't have a deal. And I give Bobby Reagan a lot of credit for seeing this through, believing in Justin. And now I think he's kind of paying that off. You know, he's gotten a lot of top 10 results. I mean, he's been your fastest qualifier at times this season. And I apologize for the background noise. This road is never busy. And for some reason, it's the busiest road in Idaho today. But I just think Justin Cooper has a promising future. And I really think where he's going to turn the corner is once we go to Pro Motocross here in a few weeks, because, you know, he was your 2021 250 Supercross champion. I think it was East Coast, maybe. I don't remember. But outdoors is his thing. You know it. I know it, right? He has lots of speed. I think that's where his confidence will show up. And I would expect to see him qualifying really well each week. Now, I don't know or think that he can beat Jet Lawrence, but to be a consistent top five guy and battle for podiums, I don't see why that's not possible. I actually kind of expect that, you know. He's got a lot of competition, Sexton, and I think Tomac's going to race. I'm pretty sure anyway, we'll find out, but I think he's going to race. Hunter will obviously be good. You know, there's a ton of guys that he'll have to go up against just like he is now, but I think he will be better than he is now, which is kind of the point. So I'm bullish on Justin Cooper and his future prospects. Malcolm Stewart is at 8, and I just don't have a lot to say about Malcolm. Like, it's been okay, but I don't know. Like, I keep going back to December, and I'm telling you, everybody I talked to that was around him, had seen him ride, knew what they were talking about, they couldn't stop talking about Malcolm Stewart, how fast he was. He was going to win races. He was the best he's ever been. Okay, I was in. I bought into it, and none of that has shown up. None of it. You know, we've seen him battle a couple times in heat races, a couple of times, and I mean that literally a couple of times. And everything else has been, I don't see how you could say it's been less than disappointing. You know, he's getting top tens here and there, okay. But for a long time, he wasn't. And I just expect more, you know, that's it. If I didn't hold him in a high regard, I would say, yeah, it's fine. Like, what do you expect from him? But I do hold him in a high regard and I do expect more, which leads me to say that this has been a disappointing season. So yeah, there it is. Number 7, Hunter Lawrence. And Hunter's been better, you know, like fastest qualifier this weekend. That was a shock. I think it shocked him, right? Like if you were, I don't know if they showed it on Race Day Live, but when he crossed the finish line and he looked up at the board, he was looking around for Jet, and Jet was behind him. He's like pointing at him like I think it shocked both of them. So it was a cool moment for Hunter. I know it's been a work in progress for him, right? And it has to be a weird thing to kind of be in the shadow of your little brother most of the time. You know, I think it helps a little bit, take some pressure off, but that has to be such a weird dynamic. You have this superstar younger brother that you are now, yeah, just, I don't know, under, again, in his shadow. Like, it's such a weird thing because Hunter was always the breadwinner and the leader, and everybody looked to him and his family. Certainly Jet did, looked up to him, of course. And now that's all very different. So I always think about that and how that has to be like the family dynamic of it. But the good news is Hunter's trajectory is improving. He's riding better. He's fitting into this 450 class. You always wonder how that's going to go. You don't ever quite know. Like, look at Christian Craig, for example. You can't look at Christian Craig's situation and say that that's been a success. It's been anything but a success. And Christian was dominant in 2022 on the 250 in Supercross. I mean, dominant, right? Like, he put it to Hunter Lawrence. And it just has never worked since then. So I don't know if it's the bike. I don't know if it's leveling up in competition and the mental challenges that come with that. You know, I don't know. But I do know that Christian Craig's results are not there. And Hunter's doing better than that. So kudos to Hunter. He's figuring this thing out. And yeah, that should continue for outdoors. I don't see why it wouldn't. Number six, Justin Barcia. He's been better too. You know, that's a fifth and a sixth in the last 2 weeks. And man, it was a rough go earlier this season. You know, he's been really unhappy with the motorcycle. The Austria group made some suspension changes that he didn't seem to love. And basically what it was, they went from 52 millimeter forks to 48s. That's the whole thing, right? And he didn't have a call. He didn't have a say in that. Once, you know, the Austria group is KTM, Husky, and GasGas. Once they made their decision and put their order in, you don't get to decide anymore. And it sounds like, you know, Chase Sexton was the one that dictated that decision. I'm sorry for the wind, guys. I know that's it's freaking blowing and cars and everything else. It's not going to plan, if you're wondering. But anyway, it sounds like once Sexton decided 48 was the answer, and Webb was very much a part of that decision last year. Webb was begging for 48 millimeter forks last year and never got them. But Barcia didn't want them, right? Barcia wanted to stay on those 52s that he really liked last season. So I may not have all the facts perfect, but that's the gist of the situation that I've kind of gotten. And the team has moved heaven and earth to try to get Barcia comfortable with the tools they have to work with. And if you want 52 millimeter forks and those are off the table, then you better start looking at alternatives to make the bike and yourself jive. And I think they've literally turned over every stone to try to make that happen. You can see it getting better. He is riding better. He looks more comfortable. You know, is he going to win a race? No. Is he the Justin Barcia of Indy and those races last year? No. But this is better than it was. And, you know, if you're just trying to say, are we better or worse than we were? This is better. And I guess you just have to grade on a curve like that sometimes. You know, sometimes it's not pass fail. Sometimes it's just, we just have to be better than we were the day before, right? And I know that's probably not an ideal way to look at it for Barcia or his team, but what's the alternative? Pack it in? You know, like, wait till next year? Like, no, of course not. You just got to figure it out and keep working. And I think that's exactly what they've been doing. Number five is Jason Anderson, and he, just like Justin Barcia, is getting better. And I think many people, including myself, had kind of given up on Anderson this season. I really did, because if you look at his results, they were trending so badly in the wrong direction. Looked like he lost his intensity, didn't have anything that he showed at the beginning of the season. And then now he's kind of back. Like, he is back. And I don't know what to point to, if it's they've gotten the bike sorted out or if the tracks are working more in his favor, but he's just riding better. End of story, right? And I fully expect that to continue through the last two rounds, because you look at the dirt, which we all know, low traction environments where everybody's searching for traction. You have to be really careful with the throttle and brakes and all that stuff. That's what works for Jason Anderson. That's his thing. And that's exactly what you're going to get in Denver and Salt Lake. So he should be right in the mix. Now, is he going to win? Probably not. But could he get podiums and battle? Could he be in the fight? Absolutely can. If he rides like this, he can. So welcome back, Jason Anderson. He brings a lot to racing. Like, is it my style of racing? Is it my type of persona? No, but that's okay. It is a lot of people's, right? He just has this kind of DGAF attitude, and you know, it used to be the whole Team Fry thing. It just it doesn't really relate to me, but that's okay. To each their own. You know, I'm much more the blue collar hard work type guy, where Anderson's more the carefree, laid back skater. It's just a different thing, and then different strokes for different folks. That's what, you know, it's what kind of brings us all together. So he's always been nice to me. I certainly don't have a problem with him. I have a damn lot of respect for his ability on a motorcycle, and I always treat people the way they treat me, and he's been nothing but nice to me ever. So yeah, good on you, Anderson, and welcome back to the fray here. At number four is Eli Tomac, and that was a weird ride from Tomac, right? Like, he had been so much better, and he gets that start, and you're like, it's on. Like, it is on. Let's see what he's got. And then it just never happened. You know, he wins the heat, and you're just expecting him to explode. He passes, he's in second, and you're like, what's he going to do? Like, what's he going to be able to do with this? Does he have anything for Jet? And honestly, he just goes backwards. You know, like, he didn't have anything for any of those guys, Anderson included. So I'd be lying if I knew what to make of it. You know, his his social post was not very telling. It was basically just like, yep, that's not it. You know, that's not what we planned on. So you don't know if it's arm pump or it was a bike setting or if he just wasn't feeling it. But after that heat race, it was surprising. I think everybody was a little bit surprised he didn't have more to give in that main event. But you never know. You know, he's not very forthcoming with information. We know that, right? So a lot of times you're going to have to guess at what's going on. And it could have been a bike thing. It could have been a him thing. Who knows, right? That whole ankle thing he didn't tell us about. That was the whole thing. So to have a ton of perspective on exactly what's going on with Tomac in the moment, it's probably a fool's errand, because he's not going to clue us in most of the time. Number three, Chase Sexton. And that was a great ride from Sexton. Absolutely great. He's gotten so much better as of late. Is he the 2023 Chase Sexton? No. But he is better. And he's getting to a point where he can win. You know, I'm still waiting for that breakout race where he just shows us all of that speed he's got. I don't think he's quite comfortable enough on this motorcycle to do that. And he even talked about after the race this weekend where they're still trying all sorts of new settings on the bike on the race weekend. And that's really rare. Like, that's not common for this late in the series. Typically, these guys by this point are just moving a couple clickers around and going racing. You know, Webb, Jet, they're not changing much. You know, they've got their bike figured out. They know a really tight range that they want to be in as far as their settings, and off they go. So to hear him say that, it was interesting because he was really good, but it's also not a good sign as far as his comfort level, because it tells me that they guessed and got it right, but they really don't know what they're doing as far as like direction. You know, if you're just throwing things at it, that means you don't have a clear direction. You know, you should already be like, okay, we have this that works. We know that. Maybe we go 2 degrees each direction to find a little bit more comfort, but we're dialed. He doesn't seem like he's dialed. So it almost feels, I guess I'm trying to say, it almost feels a little lucky, and he would probably agree with that. So they need to get that sorted out. They need to get him more comfortable so he can reach his full potential. Number two, of course, is Cooper Webb. He still sits second in points, but that was a tough one. I mean, I think everybody would say that was a tough one for Webb. He really needed to get in the fight, you know. If he didn't beat Jet, I mean, he was in second, right? You have to stay in second place there. You cannot fade back to fourth. Cannot do it. He knows that. And I'm sure he was really frustrated that he got arm pumped. You know, if you were watching closely, like, the first words out of his mouth when he pulled his helmet off were, I think he said the F word, arm pump, right? And for those of you who have never raced, arm pump is just it's debilitating. You really can't ride with any intensity. You can't ride your best. And really what happens is you just lose all your dexterity in your hands. And so, you know, all of your controls, brakes, clutch, throttle application, steering, you know, all that stuff is impaired heavily. You know, it's just like riding at 70% because you don't have all of your motor functions in your, you know, your hands. And it's a really weird thing. Unless you've ever had it, I don't know that you can ever perfectly understand what's going on. But your hands almost go numb. You know, you get so much, your arms fill up with blood and get tight. And then you have no dexterity in your hands. So, yeah, it's just, you hear these guys say they're tight. You hear them say they have arm pump. It's all the same thing, but you can clearly see it. And it's visually apparent sometimes. You know, you've heard Ricky Carmichael at times say this year, I can see him. He just looks like he has arm pump. He looks tight. And how you see that is they have no intensity at all. Like they're just kind of going through the motions. They're not able to accelerate hard out of corners. They kind of look really stiff in the air. They don't have really any sort of, like dramatic body, English in the air, right? They're simply a passenger and they're doing everything they possibly can just to log laps. And, yeah, it's a tough thing for when championship points are on the line and everything's at stake like that for Cooper Webb to be there. Like everybody that's raced at that level has suffered arm pump. It's just a tough thing when there's so much at stake for Webb and he's right behind Jet. And he wants to go chase him. He wants to put his best laps and he wants to unleash his best self with all of that hard work he's been putting. And you know, he's been working his butt off trying to get this championship and you simply can't. You just cannot ride your best. And so I certainly felt for him. It's a tough interview for me to have to do. But again, he's professional. He handled it and I appreciated it. You know, it's arguably the toughest thing I have to do. Go talk to Plessinger at Detroit last year, Webb after a really tough race like that, Dungy after his bike breaks when he's in podium contention at Washougal 2 years ago. Like those moments are really hard for me, and no one should feel sorry for me. I'm just relaying the challenges I face, and the last thing I wanted to do was go ask Cooper Webb about his race. I'm just being transparent as I can with you. I wanted no part of that. But that's the job. You have to go ask hard questions. You have to go talk to riders that want to be anywhere else than there, right? Think about Jet Lawrence at, what race was that? It's a race where he did really poorly and I can't think of where, but we interviewed him after it and he did not want to be there at all. But you know, thankfully he's willing to do that. So anyway, Webb stays at number two. 12 points out of the championship. It's not over, right? I think it's really important for him to remember that it feels like everything is lost. It feels like the championship's over, but it's not. You know, all those points that he gave up this weekend, we've seen Jet have troubles. If he gets a bad start like he did in the heat race, it can flip just that fast and he can make up 8 points again. He did it 3 weeks in a row earlier in the season. So he just needs to keep that mindset that just go win the race. Let the chips fall where they may. And I think he will. He'll have time to kind of digest this race, get past it. And I think you'll see a rejuvenated, motivated Cooper Webb when we roll into Denver in just a couple days' time. Number one is pretty easy. The only guy left, the guy that deserves to be there, it's Jet Lawrence. And I thought this was a big win for him, right? He had a lot of pressure. You know, the second race in a row, he's won. But after that heat race, you know, crashed in the first turn, so much drama. You know, it would have been very easy for Jet to fall into that scenario where like, oh no, here we go again type thing, right? Where it's going to be one of those weekends where I give back these points. And instead of going down that rabbit hole, he pulled it together. He got an incredibly good start in that main event and he made it happen. And in championships, if you're going to be the guy, those are the moments you got to step up. And that's 2 weeks in a row where he stepped up and he's got it done. Now he's got two left right? And it was important, I think, on the podium for him to say, nope, job's not done. Keep our head down, stay focused. And, you know, the time to celebrate will be in Salt Lake, right? It won't be this weekend either. Doesn't matter how many points he goes up or how it goes for him. The time to celebrate will be in Salt Lake. And he needs to stay laser focused up until that checker flag flies that weekend, because I think he's finally kind of learned his lesson that every moment until then, he's subject to losing a lot of points. Because go back and think about when we were in Birmingham, when we were in Indianapolis, think about how jovial, like how complacent he looked, kind of nonchalant about winning the race, about the points. And then think about how crazy things got after that, right? Like, I think that was a really powerful lesson for Jet to learn, is that nothing should be taken for granted. It's racing, and these guys are too good, and there's too much risk of things going sideways for you to approach this series with anything less than laser focus and understanding that it can all be taken away. All those points can go away with one incident, right? One medical cross flag on the finish line, one errant Justin Barcia entry angle, you know, it can happen just that fast. So I think he's got the right approach now, is every single moment you're on the track, you have to be dialed in to the maximum. Like, there is nothing else on this earth that matters right now until the last lap in Salt Lake. And I kind of think he's there. So that's it for this week. I apologize again for the wind. This is not how I drew it up. I can't tell how bad it is, but I can hear it in my AirPods, which means you can probably too. So I apologize for that. But I enjoyed it. It was something different. It allows me to, kind of open my mind up. I don't get lost in thought, because, I don't know, something freeing about walking and kind of talking through it. So anyway, hope you enjoyed it. Again, if it was that bad on the sound quality, I won't do it again. But anyway, it was fun for me. Hope it was fun for you. And we'll talk to you next time. See ya.